Love the dynamic piece to the Enneagram. It's very dynamic. There's no like put you in a box and stay there. You can do that and stop there, but there's so much more to it. And so the other reason I love it is that it really supports growth mindset. And it was just a transformative tool for me. It woke me up to so many things. It changed my relationship with my husband. I understand him in such a different way than I did when we got married 10 years ago. And so I think just the relationship piece of it, and then my ability to interact with other people in a really effective way, that was a game changer. And so I don't have to know their Enneagram type, but I can know that they view the world differently than I do. And that maybe I could try on a few things with them that would be different than how I want to be treated, but it's exactly how they need to be treated.
Welcome to the Improvement Nerds Podcast, where we host conversations about the things that nerd us out with one goal in mind, sharing best practices and sharing techniques and tools that allow us to make lasting change. In each episode, we'll feature a different idea, and hopefully through that episode, give you a set of new tools, new skills, and new thinking that'll allow you to change how you do your work, how you lead others, and how you show up in your life. We're so excited that you've chosen to nerd out with us. We hope that these episodes are exactly the things that you need to hear in order to get started in making the improvements that you want to see happen in the world. If these episodes speak to you, please subscribe to our podcast, like what we're doing, and leave a comment.
So, the revelation I had was that I'm actually a type 9. I am not a type 3. And so I think that's also why I have it in my coaching practice, because people get mistyped all the time, because it's testing things we're asleep to, and it's testing the why behind your behaviors, not just your behavior. So it's sort of that deeper layer. You know, we talk about Simon Sinek all the time, start with why. No different when you're talking about your own personal reflection and development. For sure. So there's usually some type of a catalytic event that happens, especially when you're in, there's a change cycle, when you're in square one of the change cycle. And Martha Beck, who taught me to be a coach, talks about it in the life cycle of a butterfly. So like when a caterpillar is, you know, in its little chrysalis, it's just like a big pile of goo, right? It's just this icky pile of goo. And it's doesn't know which end is up, right? Like it can't figure anything out, right? And so then once it starts to form and things start to change and they get more into that like growing phase, then it can start to feel a little more uncomfortable. And then when you have to get out of that little chrysalis and you have to actually do some action and actually take the leap and you know, do something in a business that you're growing, that can feel uncomfortable again. So there's this cycle that you know, kind of like, okay, now I think things are better. Oh, wait, what? Now I'm back here. What's happening? And that's just growth. I mean, these are all good things to experience, but they're uncomfortable for sure. We just have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Margaret Mead said it best when she shared that one should never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, that it was the only thing that ever had. I couldn't agree more. Let's get busy, improvement nerds. We got a lot of work to do. All right. Hey, everyone. This is Tom with the Green Dot Group recording another episode of the Improvement Nerds. I've got a very special guest, someone who has helped me out tremendously in my professional and in my personal life. It's Rachel Pritz. I'll let her introduce herself. Rachel, Welcome.
Thanks, Tom. I'm excited to be here. So, and thanks for that nice introduction. So, yeah, I have been, actually worked with Tom in the healthcare industry. So I've been in healthcare for almost 17 years and took the leap about a year ago into my own coaching practice. And now I coach people from a personal and professional standpoint. And one of the tools that I use that we're going to talk about today is the Enneagram. So I'm excited to be here to talk about that. My background, a lot in clinical care. So did about 10 years in clinical care, honing that craft. And then I got bored and said, okay, I need to do something different, learn something new. Was always interested in leadership. So got into leadership and then just kind of took off from there. Got really interested in data and analytics and moved into informatics and more of the IT side of healthcare, which was wonderful. I got to learn a lot. During that time, I was being coached myself. And so I started seeing some really big transformations for myself through coaching and helping me get unstuck from some of the things that were going on even personally. And so I really took off, which was really great. And then people started noticing, and then they promoted me, which was really cool. And then it just got to the place where it wasn't enough. So I was ready for something even bigger, and starting my own coaching practice and building that was something I was really interested in. So
yes, yeah. And so many people can count their blessings that that was your path and that's the career that you pursued. Because I know, at least personally, using you as a guide as I started my own business was just tremendous. And I can't think of how many people would probably say otherwise. I'm sure everyone you've worked with would say the same thing, that you're a joy. You just have a lot of energy, and you could talk about what it was like to be in these situations. And that helps a lot as a coach. And I know I valued that in our conversations.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. That's my candy, you know, like give me more. What else do you have? Cause you know, like most human beings, we suffer sometimes from imposter syndrome. So sometimes there, you know, moments where it's like, am I doing the right thing? You know, maybe I have no business doing this, you know, all those, you know, limiting beliefs we tell ourselves. So,
yeah. And it's like the wind, when you're in that situation, it's like that wind gets knocked out of you a little bit, that you find out maybe who you thought you were.
Right.
May not have been true. And I know that's going to be something we talk about as we talk about your services and the thing that totally nerds you out. And I'll just tell you that I had the wind knocked out of me. I'm sure you've had the wind knocked out of you. Yeah. And sometimes you can't get that breath back without enlisting a tribe of people who love you and want to help you get that breath back, and not just use that breath to return to what you were, but to breathe that into a new life. And you do that for so many people. So this episode, I hope, speaks to their individuals and that they want to seek you out or seek people like you out and get that extra help to just be reborn and pursue their passions and get over those limiting beliefs a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting, because if you would have told me this is what I'd be doing 10 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. I was actually sort of a skeptic around personal development, self-development, all this stuff, you know, buy a book and it will teach you how to do X, Y, and Z. And I was like, I don't need that. Until I needed it, until I'd hit, I would say rock bottom. I mean, I just didn't understand the purpose of life anymore. You know, I really wanted to, I knew I was here for a bigger reason than what I was currently doing. And so I wanted to kind of tap into that, become more of my authentic self. I knew there was a woman in there that was just waiting to get out. I just had to figure out how to get her out. Yes. And to do that in an effective, emotionally intelligent way. So, so it was a journey. It's still a journey. I still have my own coach. I will never give her up. She is mine forever until one of us dies. So that's what I tell her all the time. So
awesome. You're just going around jailbreaking people, basically. Let's get out of this joint.
Exactly. Awesome. That's right. So,
yeah. So, in your introduction, you mentioned that you do the Enneagram coaching. So I know maybe the response in this question that I'm going to ask, but what nerds you out?
Yeah. So it's the Enneagram. So, and you know, I think self-development in general does nerd me out. I'm still obsessed with it. But 4 years ago when I started my own journey, I was obsessed with it. I mean, it's like, I could not get enough information, enough podcasts, enough books. I was constantly reading, probably not doing my day job in some, you know, ways because I was doing these things, but I was seeing such an impact on even my day job by doing, you know, all this personal development. So I stumbled upon the Enneagram. That was something that I was kind of a naysayer on too. So this was probably 4-ish years ago. And somebody mentioned it and I'm like, okay, whatever. Another personality assessment. I've done all of these. Great. I'll take the test. Mm-hmm. So I took the test. It spit back out that I was a 3 on the Enneagram. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, read a few things. I'm like, that sounds about right. Threw it in the drawer. And I just kept getting nudged. I mean, it was like every podcast I listened to, books, I would run into people at Starbucks and they would say, have you heard of this Enneagram thing? I mean, it was like hitting me in the face where I'm like, okay, I'll circle back, you know?
Yes.
And so I decided I was going to dig in deep. I was going to figure this thing out. It seemed really complex to me on the surface with all these arrows and wings and all these, you know, fancy terms people were talking about. And so I dug in deep and I really wanted to understand the bones. I wanted to read a lot of different Enneagram teachers' methodologies because there's, you know, it's not all just one size fits all. And so I wanted to learn from a lot of different teachers. And then I started listening to people being interviewed and being typed. And that was huge for me. So the revelation I had was that I'm actually a type 9. I am not a type 3. And so I think that's also why I have it in my coaching practice, because people get mistyped all the time, because it's testing things we're asleep to. And it's testing the why behind your behaviors, not just your behavior. So it's sort of that deeper layer. You know, we talk about Simon Sinek all the time. Start with why. No different when you're talking about your own personal reflection and development. So, so that's one of the things that I love about it, is it really digs into that why. But you have to have some observation time, and you have to have a certain level of emotional intelligence already to even know why. And so there was just, yeah, so much observation time for myself. It took me about a year to figure out that I was a 9. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of that is that I got to explore all the types. And so now I knew all the other types or ways that people show up in the world and how they view the world, which is very different than the way I view the world. So it created this instant compassion for other people. And I just felt this grace for people. Their behavior didn't have anything to do with me in most circumstances. It was just their stuff that they're carrying. So when I could put it in those terms, it was just, it depersonalized it for me. And so I loved that. So I love the dynamic piece to the Enneagram. It's very dynamic. There's no like put you in a box and stay there. You can do that and stop there, but there's so much more to it. And so the other reason I love it is that it really supports growth mindset, which is a big thing for me. I used to actually be a fixed mindset person. And thank you, Carol Dweck, for her wonderful book, Fixed Mindset versus Growth Mindset. And so just separating those two things and understanding a growth mindset and what that means, the Enneagram supports that, and it supports everything we know in neuroscience right now. Like our brains are actually malleable, you know, this like neuroplasticity is a thing. And so we can actually train our brains to go in a different direction and change habits, which I love. I think that's so hopeful and reassuring, especially in my line of work, that people can make significant changes in their lives.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes it becomes very obvious to them, the changes, but then there's other times signals that they got to learn to interpret and understand, such as you sharing the story about the Enneagram. There's a lot of tools that exist that allow people to self-assess and understand maybe their behaviors or their belief systems. Yeah. So it's likely you've been trained on a lot of those as a coach, but this one, the Enneagram, just wouldn't leave you alone. I love that you said, like, just everywhere I looked, there were signals that this was the one for me. And that's one of those things that, at least in my journey, you taught me to pay attention to, is, you know, what are those things that you're seeing or feeling, not thinking about, but like are experiencing? Go back to those. Those are important signals. And it was really interesting to hear that that's really how you fell into the Enneagram, is it just wouldn't go away. It was meant to be your emphasis. And I think you did a wonderful job of explaining the tool, you know, what is it. I think there was a little bit of a backstory in the origins of this tool. So at least when you first mentioned it to me, I'm like, oh, you know, something new. Mm-hmm. It's not new, is it? Tell us a little bit about its origins, how it came about, and maybe go a little bit deeper on the tool.
Sure. Yeah. So it's been around for thousands of years. The history is a little negotiable. So depending on who you talk to.
Tell us like the history in Star Wars. No, that would be hard. But it's yes. I know it's been around for a while, and there's probably multiple stories that exist. And you and I are Star Wars nerds. So.
Yes. Okay, I could do that. Yeah.
I know you could.
Maybe I should have made that my nerdy topic. That would have been fun.
I know. Yeah. Well, this episode would have been like 4 hours long if we talked about Star Wars. Okay, then give us the actual history, I suppose.
So like I said, you know, it's somewhat negotiable. But the pretty little diagram, if you look up the Enneagram, is intentional. And so that's the other reason I love it, is it wasn't just something somebody threw together. It was actually a lot of spiritual teachers a long, long, long time ago that got together, all from different types of faith origins. So it wasn't just, you know, Christian or whatever that looks like. And they were observing people, which we don't do a great job of in today's world because we're so busy. You know, it's like everything's just so chaotic. We don't sit and just observe people. So they were sitting and observing people, and they came up with these 9 types or ways to sort of view the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the typology system started. And they were saying, you know, hey, there's some close connections here of things that people can turn on and off through different numbers. So you can look like different numbers in some circumstances. That's the growth mindset piece of it. So like when I need to turn on my 8 wing, I can, you know, because I've learned to do that. And so then in the 1950s, there was a psychologist that got a hold of it, in South America and started putting it together with what we know about human psychology. So human psychology has only been around for about 150 years. You know, it's fairly brand new. And so they were piecing the Enneagram and what these spiritual teachers had learned and observed with human psychology. And they're like, hey, this is spot on. You know, this feels really accurate to us.
Yes.
And so from there, that's just, there's been so many people that have dug in deeper, psychologists, psychiatrists, all sorts of people that really understand the brain. And they started, you know, just expanding on that. And, yeah. And then they interviewed so many people and they learned from that. And so then they added to the depths of it. So the levels of development is something that has only been around for about 40-ish years. Mm-hmm. And so that talks about how healthy you are inside that type. And so that's the other thing I really like about it is I, as a type 9, if I'm unhealthy or even average, I can look very different than I look when I'm emotionally healthy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a great growth path too for you to kind of check in with yourself. Where am I today? And how am I showing up in the world and how can I improve that? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think aside from the history and the scholarly work that has gone around it, there's mm-hmm. other tools like Myers-Briggs and DISC that as you take them, there's kind of a disclaimer across the bottom. So, you know, this is something that's not necessarily prescriptive. This is based on your responses in certain circumstances. But even with those disclaimers, as people take those, they validate it in the way that they feel. And as they read through those things, they're like, yeah, that's pretty true.
Yeah.
And I think outside of those things happening for the Enneagram, I'm sure the people as you coach them, they're validating as well with this is pretty accurate. And I feel that, or I sense that, or that's accurate. And that is a limiting belief that I've had or need to be more aware of,
right,
kind of thing. So are you getting that response from your clients? How many people are helping to validate it, maybe in an unscientific way, but more yes. of a personal connected way?
And I think it's more, I mean, it's anecdotal feedback that you get where we go through this guidebook that I created and I ask them some questions. And I mean, people are in tears at times, you know, it's really things that maybe they've sort of suppressed and are coming up too. And even when they start thinking about childhood and how they were raised, they can start connecting it there. But absolutely. I mean, I think there's so much there, yes, just anecdotal, not so science. And, you know, coming from healthcare, I mean, I'm that science was my thing, you know?
Yes.
And I've learned to trust some of that anecdotal, you know, evidence that we have. It doesn't always have to be hard numbers or data driven. So,
yeah. You just spoke to my inner nerd. It was like you were saying quantifiable data and qualifiable data. So all the improvement experts and dorks out there are just, now they get it. I just started to nerdier ways. That's really, I think that's a great way to view the world is not just these signals, but like hard data and then emotions. And that anecdotal part is probably a lot about feeling. So in this, and you talked a little bit about people as they learn their type and they walk this journey, things that may have arisen in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, at least in my journey, as you and I had conversations, you asked me to think about life events that caused me to kind of try to fit in certain ways or redefine what good looked like.
Yeah.
And that over time created a different like persona within myself. So talk a little bit about this theory that you're two people, you're authentic and your social self.
Yep.
So tell us what those things are.
Yeah. So your social self is really just the person that you've been trained to be. And so you get lots of messages from your family of origin, from peers, from mentors, from job roles, all sorts of things, from your spouse. You know, I mean, you get influenced as far as, you know, what or who you want to be. And so so sometimes we can get pretty far away from who we are authentically because we've been socialized in such a way that now we don't even recognize ourselves. And so I think unraveling some of that, the Enneagram does, other tools do that as well, but unraveling, getting back to who you were born to be versus who the world told you you should be is really important. And we're never going to be fulfilled and really truly happy if we can't unravel some of that. So you can only push your authentic self down for so long before she or he starts screaming and says, hold on. something's wrong. Enter yes. midlife crisis. So, and that's where I get a lot of clients, is in that space where something's really wrong and I don't know what it is. I can't even articulate what my problem is.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how you and I cross paths, is in some ways I prided myself on how good I was as an athlete, and that athletes succeed because of their mental capacity to endure pain. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, oh, I've got mental fortitude. And then I, you know, followed footsteps that many people had before. You know, you had mentioned that you took the leap, you started your own business. I wasn't too far behind you. Mm-hmm. And as I took that jump, like, I had emotions that I had no idea what to do with. I was afraid to admit that I was experiencing them. And mm-hmm. I'm sure people listening to this can relate to, you know, I didn't believe, you know, anxiety was a real thing, or those people who had anxiety, I never really understood them. And oftentimes that switch gets flipped when you try to shed yourself of that social persona that you have, and you start mm-hmm. to move into your authentic self. It's like the social self throws the anchor, is like a child in Target that you're not going to buy the little dollar car for, and they yeah. kick and scream. So yeah. do you see that has a common response when people take this journey on?
For sure. So there's usually some type of a catalytic event that happens, especially when you're in, there's a change cycle, when you're in square one of the change cycle. And Martha Beck, who taught me to be a coach, talks about it in the life cycle of a butterfly. So like when a caterpillar is, you know, in its little chrysalis, it's just like a big pile of goo, right? It's just this icky pile of goo, and it's doesn't know which end is up, right? Like it can't figure anything out. Right. And so then once it starts to form and things start to change and they get more into that like growing phase, then it can start to feel a little more uncomfortable. And then when you have to get out of that little chrysalis and you have to actually put, like, do some action and actually take the leap and, you know, do something in a business that you're growing, that can feel uncomfortable again. So there's this cycle that you know, kind of like, okay, now I think things are better. Oh, wait, what? Now I'm back here. What's happening? And that's just growth. I mean, these are all good things to experience, but they're uncomfortable for sure. We yes. just have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
I think that's a very accurate statement. And also, don't put a time limit on these events. Like, oh, I'm going to be uncomfortable, but it's only going to last a little bit, or it's only yeah. going to happen once. That's, you know, you're trying to rush it. And I think some good advice you gave me is, this is a journey. All these things that you're experiencing, don't just walk past them, but stay present in them and try to learn what it is that maybe you're afraid of, or learn where you're trying to come out as your authentic self and validate that to be true. So I think that's good advice you gave me. I want to make sure I mention it, is don't rush this thing. Mm-hmm. Experience whatever you're experiencing. In fact, in your newsletter today, that was, you were talking a little bit about hitting rock bottom and, yeah. and just giving people permission to stay there for a moment to take inventory of maybe why they're there.
Yeah.
Because if you don't assess what's happening, or maybe why you're in that situation, how are you ever going to climb out of it or prevent yourself from growing through it the next time it occurs? So your newsletter hit on that this morning. And yeah. I think it's a really important takeaway in any self-improvement journey. And as we move in questions, I know this isn't all about self-improvement. This has got broad application. So we'll get to yeah. that question as well, yeah. how this intersects with improvement. But I have one more question. Why the Enneagram? Why does it nerd you out? Why is it a passion of yours?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think whenever you're a skeptic of something and then you're proven wrong, I don't know, there's something powerful behind that. It taught me about my own ego and what I thought I knew. Which I clearly didn't. So I already had these judgments around it that were not true. So I think it taught me a lesson there. And it was just a transformative tool for me. It woke me up to so many things. It changed my relationship with my husband. I understand him in such a different way than I did when we got married 10 years ago. And so I think just the relationship piece of it, and then my ability to interact with other people mm-hmm. in a really effective way, that was a game changer. And so I don't have to know their Enneagram type, but I can know that they view the world differently than I do. And that maybe I could try on a few things with them that would be different than how I want to be treated, mm-hmm. but it's exactly how they need to be treated. So I think for me, it's just done, it has made a huge impact on me. And then I see these shifts in my clients all the time. And so it just makes sense to me. You know, I've used other tools and I just don't see those major life shifts happening. So I think the Enneagram is just one way to do that. But it's got some legs. Like, we need to dig into this thing if you're interested. So, yeah.
Do you share with your clients that you work with them that you were a naysayer of this before?
I do sometimes.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I've been doing more of that. But even then, I was a personal development naysayer. It's like, this is my, this is what I do for a living. I build a business around it. But yeah, I think sometimes that when we're naysayers and we're judgers or we're skeptics, sometimes we have to, fall hard in order to open our eyes a little bit. And so now I just, I tell everyone, I just remain curious. Like, if somebody tells me something new, okay, well, let me dig into it and see what I really think about it before I make a judgment on it and say it's not worth anything. I mean, I could have missed something really big and a transformative tool in my life had I just, thrown it in the drawer and said, whatever.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, when they encounter anything new, they're interpreting that new based on their past or how maybe they're programmed, their belief systems. And you got to be in a growth mindset. You got to be very intentional to have a curiosity about almost everything. So I think what I'm hearing from your why is it's opened up your world to new thinking, to new people, to new relationships and even deeper relationships. It's obvious then that those things are all true for you. So of course you're in love with it. It's just, helped you blossom and will continue to help you blossom. Yeah. So in some of what you were saying there, I heard quite a few implications in your own life that, between you and your husband, it had applications there. It strengthened that relationship. Obviously you've used it for your own self-improvement. You're using it for your clients' self-improvement. So we know in regards to improvement, it's got those two things. It's applying to individuals and it's applying to families. Are there any other contexts in which you're using the Enneagram for maybe improvement at a larger scale?
Yeah, so I do some work with corporate clients just from a relationship standpoint, so especially on leadership teams. So bringing people together and learning the Enneagram, so we learn how to treat the people around us and we kind of understand how they, tick and what's going on there. That's been really helpful. I think just the increase in EQ alone is huge in organizations. And so, if we can do that, our IQ is pretty stuck. You can move it a few points, but the EQ, you can strengthen that sucker all day long. And so you can become a bodybuilder, on the EQ side, you can really strengthen those muscles. Right. And so that's what I love. And then I love watching teams interact in a better, more effective way. I think from a productivity standpoint, that's huge. So, I know in the corporate world, we talk a lot about productivity and how can we be efficient, all those types of things. And how can we, make this process better? Well, when you have a high EQ, teams are going to function much better. So, just when you think about my husband and I, adding we're a team. And so if we would have added, more people to that team and I've coached some family through the Enneagram and that's helped our relationships, we're so much more effective. So, and I think in general, we're just happier people, right? We're not trying to just figure each other out. We have a prescription now on how to kind of treat this person, So, yeah, I think the EQ on the business corporate side is huge and it's tough to teach that. And so people have to put some effort in there for sure. The individuals do. But having a framework for that with the Enneagram, I think is really helpful.
Yeah. And I think somewhere along the way, I'd read that EQ is the next competitive advantage and that really it's something that allows the organization to team better. Google did a bunch of research. They're calling it psychological safety. Well, it's hard to participate on any team if you don't know yourself first. So the Enneagram does, it sounds like in your engagements with organizations, it really focuses on sample size of one, that individual, and helps them to understand who they are and how they view the world first before they go outside themselves and try to interact with others.
Exactly. That's right. And so I like to call it, we talk about self-awareness a lot on EQ, but I like to call it self-wisdom because awareness isn't enough.
Yeah.
So the awareness is just, okay, that's great. I know. But now what am I going to do with it? And so I think when you get to a place where you're truly wise within yourself, that's where we want people to be. And then that's how they start creating those better relationships, improved relationships. But yeah, I think the first step is always the self wisdom, which takes some time. To your point earlier, like, you can't rush this stuff. You really got to take some time and dig in deep.
Yeah. In some ways, like, I don't want our listeners to think that this is all about leaning in. Because when you practice this wisdom and you grow as a person, in some ways you may be able to assess your relationship with work or your circle. And in some ways you may be making decisions to walk out. And I don't want people to think this is all about know yourself so that you can endure whatever situation you're in. Yeah. Know yourself so you can make decisions about what kind of situations you want to create for yourself in your future.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I coach a lot of high achievers. So I get a lot of threes and eights on the Enneagram. And so they can come to me exhausted because they have tons of energy and they're pouring everything into their work or whatever that looks like. And they come to me and they're like, I can't do this anymore. I'm just absolutely burnout exhausted. And so it's really helpful for them to understand why they feel that way. Like, what was the message, or what's the message that they've received throughout life that makes them feel like they can't put their feet up, you know? So, and that, you know, threes and eights are a lot of CEOs in companies and, you know, and so it's just fascinating to figure, you know, have them figure some of that out and unravel some of that for themselves. So they realize that the only value they bring to the world is not just working 24 hours a day, right? Like, they are valuable first. So Yeah.
And that's almost another episode that I need to create with you, is this war on burnout.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this focus on productivity and creating value. In some ways, it's becoming detrimental. And I know outside of working the Enneagram, you do a lot of organizational coaching and facilitating to help them understand maybe where the burnout's occurring, why it's occurring, and what they can be doing about it. So I know that's another passion of yours.
Yes.
And thank you for one, your background working in nursing and all the patients that you cared for and the sacrifices you made to invest in that education and to do that strenuous work. And I know because you are in those shoes, that's a certain segment that you really focus on is nursing. And I know there's probably other groups of people that are experiencing it too, but I know nursing and the concern of burnout is something that you're really passionate about.
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting because coming from healthcare, we talk about burnout all the time in nursing and in physicians or providers, but it's everywhere. Okay. So everywhere I go, I've done some work in higher education. Big burnout problem there. It's just everywhere. I mean, drive down the road and look at the people next to you and they look miserable. They're driving into work and they're miserable. And this is not why we were put here. We were not put here to live in misery. I promise you that. Whatever you believe, whatever your belief system is, we were not put here for this. And so, it is a problem. It is a personal mission of mine to combat the burnout crisis.
Yeah. And you're such a warrior in that. And, thank you for leading that charge and for all the people that you've helped in those roles to learn that they have a voice and to advocate for themselves so that they can advocate better for patients. And I know that you're making improvements, not just for the nursing, but for the patients that those nurses serve. So that's tremendous.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
So I want to know, I'm curious, what's been saving your life lately?
So I could say something small, like coffee sometimes does save my life. It could be that simple, right? But I really think, so I've been going to Orange Theory for about the last 3 months and I love it. I had some injuries recently, broke my ankle about a year and a half ago. So I really honestly never thought I'd be able to run again. And I'm not a big runner, but there's something about it that I just love. It's super motivating to me. They play like some gangster rap in there sometimes, which I can get on board with, you know, so it's great. But yeah, I go to 3 to 4 times a week and I have tons of energy. I don't need as much coffee when I'm going there, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I found community there, which is surprising too. And yeah, I'm all in. I'm one of those people, but I was a naysayer about that too. So yeah, there is a theme here. I've learned a lot. I had a bunch of friends that were going and I was like, no, I'm not interested in that, you know? And it's like, yeah. Sometimes we just have to stay curious and try things. And I did, because I've learned that lesson the hard way. So yeah.
And I think with that, I think it's funny. Your theme is that naysaying. And for at least what I've known of you is that you always allow yourself to say yes when you're afraid, but no when like it's an F no. Like,
yeah.
You know, on this, you've been super sweet. So I want to thank you for not, you know, dropping any F bombs.
It's hard for me. I figured you didn't want that explicit tag on the, yeah, you know,
for
on the
this
podcast,
episode
so,
only.
Yes, because Rachel Fritz is here. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, I can say hell. Can I say hell?
Yeah, you can say hell.
So, yeah, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. I mean, I think that's a theme for me, you know. So when somebody asks me to do something and I'm like, that's not a hell yes, no.
Yes.
You know, so learning just to say no, and it's a full sentence, right? No.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So I do want to know, and I'm hopefully, you know, reaching out and getting information for the audience that they probably would ask for anyways. So people who are listening to this and you've lit the fire in them, they're curious and they want to know more about the Enneagram or start their own journey. How do they get a hold of you?
Yeah. So you can go to my website at rachelpritz.com. There is a way to contact me through there, or set up just a quick 20-minute phone call so we can chat. I'd love to just chat and meet new people. I have a call with a guy from Brussels later this week, which will be fun. So talking about the Enneagram. So that's one space. You can also find me on LinkedIn. So I do lots of work on LinkedIn. And so you can always send me a message there. I'm on it fairly frequently. So I would see that message. And yeah, I just love to connect, and especially with local people in Indy, I love grabbing a coffee and learning what people do and kind of learning what makes them tick and what they nerd out on as well. So yeah.
I see like a blue ocean strategy, like the Enneagram and RIT type training, that rapid interval training, like you're going to blend Orange Theory and the Enneagram into one thing.
Yeah, I just saw somebody on Instagram. There's a lot of like memes on Instagram around the Enneagram. Some of them are completely false, but they're funny. And so somebody was talking about fitness and the Enneagram. And so they connect. And I was like, I was just thinking about this at Orange Theory. You could totally connect these two. So it was so funny. And what fits for you is with your personality. So it's just interesting. Yeah.
So basically, she's willing to try anything to help people discover themselves. Like,
that's
enter
exactly.
A whole new
market. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your help in my journey. I would recommend you, and I do recommend you to so many people. You're just level-headed. You ask the hard questions that most people really don't want to answer. But because they've been asked, they may not answer it during the coaching sessions, but they do think about it, and it gives them that opportunity to discover maybe the truths or the untruths. A lot of what you helped me do is realize I told myself stories that were completely made up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people listening to this, they're telling themselves these same stories that
we
are completely
all do it.
Made up.
Yeah. Unless you're, I've yet to meet a single person that doesn't do some storytelling. So for sure.
Yeah. I'd say the greatest thing you gave me was to change the way I talked to myself. And, you know, I know you'll do that for whoever reaches out. And what I hope is that this message rings true for a lot of people, and that you become a part of those people's lives and help them help them the way that you helped me. And I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, you did the work. So that's the key message here. You did the work. I just asked some questions, right? So you have to give yourself some credit there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you hear it here first. I do work hard, and then you will too if you reach out to her. She's not going to do it for you. She'll ask you hard questions that you need to answer.
That's
thanks again for coming on the episode.
Thanks, Tom.